And then we can just start at the beginning. What do you think?
You mean back to creation?
Yes, creation.
I thought I would explain my theory of the creation. Would you like that?
The big bomb theory?
The big bomb. Uh-oh, it looks like a jury last night. That man who was in the concentration camp.
Oh, did anybody watch QB7 last night?
No. We read it.
Have we got, let's see, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and an ex, and a judge. Famous jury trial. Well, okay, I suppose the thing to do is people want to tell their life stories. I've told this story so many times that I feel everybody's heard it already. You have never heard my life story.
No.
Well, first off, I was born. Well, my story with Baba, in a way, I mean, as far as, you know, getting to know about Baba comes about by the fact that I decided when I was about 18 to become a ballet dancer. And I, through a series of circumstances, wound up at the Metropolitan Opera Ballet School to study, and the director of that school was Margaret Crask, who I'm sure all of you know, have met at one point or another. And when I arrived there, I of course, didn't know anything about dancing, and I certainly didn't know anything about the spiritual life, so to speak. And everybody there knew that Miss Crask had been to India and lived with some man there. It was something very strange. And of course, in those days, the whole idea of a guru or anything like that was very far out. Nobody had any idea about it. And there were all kinds of stories about her that were circulated. For instance, people thought that yogis swallowed yards of gauze. Have you ever heard this story about her? I'm going to tell stories about her. I think that's the best way to do it, to clean themselves out. She, when she came from India, and Baba sent her to the West, back again, she was ballet mistress of a ballet company, which is now the American Ballet Theater. And she traveled with them. And, you know, female dancers in certain ballets wear a sort of short dress called a tutu, which is made out of kind of gauze-like material. And one day, one of them had disappeared. They couldn't find it anywhere, and people spread the story that she'd eaten it. And she was always, right from the beginning, a very fascinating person to me. There was something that drew everybody to her. I think everybody that studied at that school through all the years was very drawn to her for one reason or another. And I remember in 1952, right, when Baba had this automobile accident, and she went away, disappeared out of the school for some time, and people were saying she'd gone, that her, the man that she'd lived with in India had an automobile accident. And we didn't know anything about it, but she was a very, very strong, attractive kind of character, and some of the people had already heard about Baba through her, and Tex Hightower, who a lot of you probably have heard, he was one of the very first ones, and he met Baba in 52, and he was a dancer at that time in the Metropolitan Opera, and from the very beginning, I was also very drawn to him, and he forms a certain part of my story with Baba also, where he, of course, knew about Baba, and he told a girl named Maria Dare about Baba, and in 1954, I was had my first job in Williamsburg, Virginia, dancing in a historical pageant called the Common Glory. It was more common than glorious, I think. At that point, there was another dancer named Peter Saul who would wander off with Marie and do some kind of sort of very sort of, I don't know what you call it, sort of affected, I thought, things like sitting and reading poetry and whatnot, and I always wondered what they were doing. And from my first meeting with Peter, we were more or less rivals. There were, you know, we were rivals for the parts in the show, and there was a whole sort of friendship kind of rivalry, hate relationship. And what happened was that he had not studied at the Met, he had not met Miss Crass, but because he'd heard about Baba from Marie, and what a wonderful teacher she was, he came, when we all went back to New York in the fall, he came to the Met to study, and we were in the same class. And one night we'd gone out for coffee after class, and we were sitting and having one of our usual fights, and he got so steamed up about me that he started to really sort of let me have it. And he finally, in exasperation, he said, "Well, you're so awful. The only thing that could help you is Meher Baba." And I said, "Well, what's, you know, what, who is that? What's that?" He didn't know anything about it. He just heard about it the day before, practically. And he started to tell me about reincarnation, and that struck me right off the bat as something that was perfectly logical and appealing. And then I started thinking about it, and we discussed how you get about knowing about Mom. And the thing was to ask Miss Crass if she could go and see her. She lived in the hotel where she still lives, as a matter of fact, not the same room, but in the same hotel. And I think I waited a couple of weeks, and I finally got all my nerve together. It was quite a frightening prospect. And I asked her if I could go and see her and speak about Meher Baba, and she said, "Of course." And I said, "Well, you know I'm not good enough for this." And she looked at me and said, "Well, I mean, even the common criminal is good enough for Baba." So he said, and I thought, "Well, that's not a very good start." One of the boys said, "Well, her room is, you go there and it has blue light and it's full of incense and the gong goes off and it's very, very strange." Well, I did get to go to her, and that was the beginning. I mean, that's the beginning as far as I know it. Of course, it started probably long before that. But what she did with myself and with all the other dancers that came to be a group of us, she told stories about Baba. She never really gave us any kind of lectures or advice as to what we should do to follow Baba. She simply brought Baba to life for us, and we would go there and maybe get a picture. In those days, pictures were very hard to come by. It wasn't like now. And it turned out that quite a bunch of us lived in the same crummy apartment house on 49th Street. Marie lived there, Peter lived there, I lived there, two other dancers named Viola Farber and a girl named Susan Roth, and she lived there, a boy named Donald Sprinkle, he lived there, and Tex lived right around the corner on 48th Street. And we had sort of a racket. We used to, one person would go to Miss Crass and get a picture and then come back, and when they came back, we would all get together in Marie's apartment and repeat what Miss Crass had told and showed, you know, the picture and all of that. And so Baba became a very alive to us. But at the time, as a person, I was not ready to give in or give up anything for Baba. And Miss Crass, wait, here comes somebody to the door. Is it Elijah? No. Hi, Uta.
How are
you? Started knowing about Baba, there was a commitment that I didn't really know about. And the interesting thing was that our life with Baba was centered very much in the ballet class or classes that we had every day with Miss Crass. And in that class, I came up against, for the first time, consciously, what I now know is my ego. I was very temperamental and very frustrated in my dancing. Whenever I would feel that I couldn't do something or was too difficult, I'd stop and stamp my feet and get into a rage, and she would be forever having this big problem with me. Well, what happened was the sort of climax of many, many, many fits of temperament and smashings down by Miss Crass was one day when I had gotten sort of good enough to get into the morning class. The morning class was the professional, so-called professional class. There was a certain level that you had to be at to be in that class. And I had just gotten in there, and of course I was very full of myself. I thought I was really pretty terrific. And one day I was standing at the bar, and that's at the beginning of the class. You hang on to a kind of a pipe that's fastened to the wall, and you do your exercises to warm up, and you do the left foot 16 of something, and then you turn around and you do 16 of something on the other side, and it goes like that. And it so happened that Tex was standing behind me and I was in front of him, and of course when you turn around then Tex would be in front of me. And Tex was, because of his having met Baba and because he was at that time in the Metropolitan Opera Ballet, I sort of worshipped the ground he walked on. At the same time, I had this really strong thing about I was always right about things. And this day, Miss Crass gave an exercise, and she said, "And," which makes the pianist play, and the pianist playing makes you start, and I started, and then looked around the room, and everybody was doing something different. Not different, but different from what I was doing. And I got really, really angry, and I thought to myself, what are they doing? I'm the only one here who's seen what Miss Krask has given, and the rest of them are all wrong. And I was very, very upset about it. And then the exercise came to an end, and I turned around on the other side, and we started off on the other foot, and I looked at Tex, and he was also doing what everybody else was doing, and for some strange reason, that drove me into a I became paralyzed with rage at the thought that even he'd betrayed me. And I was convinced that what happened was I stopped. I just stopped right in the middle of the exercise, and Miss Krask clapped her hands, and she said, why have you stopped? And I said, well, Miss Krask, you're all doing the wrong exercise. she said, never mind what they're doing, just go on. And I thought, well, and so she started the music again, and I tried to start, and I couldn't. There was a whole class doing this version that was different from my version. It sounds absolutely ridiculous, but it drove me into such a frenzy of rage and the feeling that I was right and they were wrong and I wasn't going to do it. I couldn't move. I just stopped again, and she stopped the class. Imagine this is in front of a whole class of about 35 or 40 people, of whom maybe three or four know about Bob, and the rest of them are not in on the joke. She said, either go on or leave the class. So, only she didn't say leave the class, she said leave. And I looked around the room, and I was overcome with inertia, or whatever you want to call it. I could not. And she started the music again, and I didn't. I couldn't, and I stomped out of the room. And I went in the dressing room and I got dressed and I slammed the door as I left and went down the street and I said, that's it. I'm finished. I'm not going to ever come back to this school again. And I'm not going to ever see Miss Krask again. And I'm not going to have anything to do with Baba again. That's absolutely finished. So I thought I would wait downstairs and go in the little greasy spoon and have a cup of coffee. And when the class was over, I would go back and get all my things, pack them up, and leave without having to see anybody, take the easy way out. I waited, and of course everybody had left, and I went back upstairs and I packed up my things, and as I was leaving, the secretary at the ballet school, who was this very old, little old Irish lady who adored Miss Krask, came out of the office and stopped me, and she said, you cannot come back to class here until you apologize to Miss Krask. And I said, I will never apologize to Miss Krask, and that's the end of that. I don't want to come back here anyway. And I left. And I went home and I locked the door of my apartment and I stayed in there I didn't stay in the apartment for 3 days, but to all intents and purposes, I stayed in the apartment for about 3 days and I just didn't go to class, but I couldn't get myself to go anywhere else either. I was not thought of going to another school, which was my plan of action. So one day, some days later, I found myself walking down the street and I was in front of Miss Krask's hotel and I thought, well, I'll just go in and call her up on the house phone. So I dialed her room number and voice, hello? And I said, Miss Krask, and there's a silence. And I said, it's Donald, and another silence, well? And I said, I think I'd better come up and see you. And she said, I think you better have, and slammed down the phone. So I, knees knocking, you know, I went up in the elevator and I knocked on her door, and the door opened, and she had, I mean, I don't know if it was deliberate or not, but she had made no attempt to look pleasant at all. Her hair was down, hanging loose, using a bathrobe, you know, no makeup. She looked like the Witch of Endor. And she said, come in, and I went in and I sat down, and she didn't give me a minute. She said, why did you do that? And I started to explain myself, and she said, never mind. She said, if you loved me, you wouldn't have done that. And I said, but Miss Krask, I do love you. She said, what? She said, you know you don't. She said, and what's more, you don't love Baba. And that was smashing of something. I just burst into tears and collapsed on the floor or whatever, I don't know. And it just went, just like that. That was the end of that. And of course I came back to class and went on with my lessons. And of course I still stomped my feet and stopped and things, but it was less. It was like a break in what I had, you know, what I was like as a person. And well, 1956 came along and I got my first big job in a company in Canada, the National Ballet of Canada. And I went off to Toronto just at the point that it was announced that Baba was coming to the States. So I was going to meet Baba. I was in Toronto and I flew down to New York for the weekend that Baba was at the Delmonico Hotel. And the morning that Baba Raji went, all went out to the airport, which was then called Idlewild, and watched plane after plane after plane coming in, thinking that was the one, that was the one. And I think you have to imagine that we had heard about Baba through all of these stories and seen his pictures, and Baba was a very real, live person. But to think that now we were going to see him, this man that Miss Kresk had been with in India and who they'd done this with and that with and the other, it was quite fantastic. We didn't, at least I didn't really know, I don't know how to explain this to you, it was fantastic that we were going to see him, but the idea that Baba was God or the avatar or what, I don't know if that really came into it. Well, Baba's plane finally landed, and the first I saw him was through a big window in the immigration. And there was quite a crowd of people standing around, and Baba came in, he was wearing his pink coat, and he was extremely radiant, that's all I can say, he glowed. And he waved, and then he came out, and then came the first of the series of when I was with Baba. I wanted Baba to recognize me. I wanted him to come up to me and shake my hand or pat me on the head and say, Donald, I've been waiting for you all these centuries, and here you are at last, you know, and you really... I wanted him to know who I was and that I was special to him. Not necessarily better than anybody else, but really that I had a relationship with him and he knew what I was. And he came out and he started to go around the crowd of people. And I remember him seeing Miss Kresk, and I think that was the first time since 52 that she'd seen him. And you could really see the love between the two of them. That struck me very strongly. Then Baba came out of the line and he met Peter, my rival. And he came up to Peter and took Peter's face in his hands and looked at him like, this is my long lost love, you know. And he went on and he walked right past me. And that was, you know, I wanted so badly for him to do something. Then Baba got in his car and went off into the city, and we went back, and it was very early in the morning. We went and had breakfast, and at the appointed time we went to the Delmonico Hotel. And we waited in a room outside the room Baba was in. And if I remember correctly, Ella and Fred were ushering people in when they were called. And finally Baba called for the dancers, Miss Kresk and her dancers, to come in. And we all came in, and Baba was on that, you've seen the movies, lying on that chaise lounge. And one by one we were introduced to Baba. And when my turn came, Miss Kresk said my name, and I went up to Baba and I sat down. And I don't remember really what was said. Erich said something, Baba's very pleased to see you or something, and Baba gave me a grape or something, yes, prasad. And I buried myself in his arms, and I remember I had my cheek on his cheek. And it was like I never wanted to get up ever at all. And I felt the hands pushing me, Baba, that's it, up and out. And several people collapsed on the floor and they had a fit of, you know, emotional thing, and they cried. And I felt I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel love from Baba or to Baba. That's what this is going to have, you know, at the end I'm going to tell you about this. But I felt that I didn't feel anything. And not that I didn't recognize Baba for what he was. I mean, I certainly, as far as my limitations were, I recognized that. There was no question, but I felt something lacking in me. I felt, and this is the start of a long series, I felt like you feel when you go to a party that you're not invited to and you don't really belong. And we went out and sat in the room again, and we didn't know what to do. And we thought, well, you know, we've met Baba. Is that the end of it? We don't know. So we sat there and sat there and sat there. And suddenly we were called back in again, and then we got the idea that if we hung around there, you know, we would get to see him. So that weekend was passed that in that way of, you know, meetings at the Delmonico. One morning Baba was to go on a tour of the city in a chartered bus, which was chartered by one of the groups who shall remain nameless, and they had gotten Baba, you know, to go on this tour. And we knew that Baba was going on this tour, and so we decided we would come and stand outside the doorway at the Delmonico Hotel, and we'd see Baba when he came out of the hotel and got on the bus, which was, you know, that was wonderful, that was fun. We had no thought of going on this trip. So the bus was standing there, the bus started filling up with people, And when the bus was full, and it was full, I mean, it was bulging, Baba came. Baba stood on the sidewalk on Park Avenue with his, in his coat, and he had his hands in his pocket, and I was standing very about this close to him, looking at him and seeing all these people walking down Park Avenue past him, mm-hmm. thinking, you know, how really extraordinary it was. People would go over to Israel to walk where Christ walked, or here they were walking right past him, and nobody batted an eyelash, mm-hmm. whether, you know, I don't know what was going on, but Baba stood there, and then finally when the bus was packed to its limit, Baba got on the bus and sat down, and we were all standing on the sidewalk, beamingly, you know, been there waving him off. And all of a sudden we saw Baba look at us and gesture, come on the bus. And we went, this, you know, come on the bus. So Baba sent somebody out, I don't remember anymore whether it was Eric or Adi, but one of the Mandli who was with Baba, and he came out and said, off the bus, and said, Baba wants to know why you're not getting on the bus. He's calling you. And we said, well, the bus is chartered by this other group, and we're not in that group. And it's perfect. You're right. Tell Baba we're very happy. We're here. We see him. But there isn't any room on the bus for us. So Mondali went up into the bus, and we saw him talking to Baba. And Baba turned around, looked out the window, and went, come on the bus. Come on the bus. And so then whoever it was came out again and said, Baba says, that if you don't get on the bus right now, he's not going. So he got on the bus, and Baba made the whole back seat of the bus get up and squeeze in into other seats. And we filled in the whole back of the bus, and the bus took off, and Baba turned around to us and went like this. And so we went on that tour, and Baba was showing the sights of New York. And interestingly enough, it's interesting to me, I don't know if it is to you, we went past the UN, and to get from the UN, when you go to the UN, you have to make a left turn off of First Avenue, you go up 49th Street, which was the street where we lived, and we went past our house with Bama. So we all sort of said, that's something very significant. Anyway, that weekend passed, and I had to go back to Canada. Some of the dancers went on with Baba to a trip around the United States, and they went down to the West Coast, they went down here to Washington, wherever, and down to the center, I believe. I don't remember. Anyway, they did this trip, and I went off to Canada and started my career as a dancer. And at this, all the time, I mean, I was very, very happy to have met Baba, but I felt this funny thing about not being recognized. And 1958 came about, and I was still with the same ballet company, and it was known that Baba was coming to the States, and that we were to make arrangements to come to Myrtle Beach and stay there and see Baba. And I decided that I got very confused about what one was supposed to do in their life with Baba, and Baba, you know, you should do your job and you should do your duty in the world. And I thought, well, my job is this ballet company, we're on a tour. And so my duty is to stay with the company. And so I wrote to Marie, and I said that I wasn't coming to see Baba because I felt my duty was to stay with the ballet company. And so some time passed, the letter got to New York, and I received a letter back from, no, it wasn't a letter, it was a telegram from Marie saying to call Miss Crasp immediately. So I called Miss Crasp, and she said, what is this I hear about you not coming to see Baba? And I said, well, Miss Crasp, I think, and she said, never mind. I have to say that she was not one to give advice. She didn't really tell us what to do in our life with Baba. At this point, she put, you know, she put in her 2 cents. She said, nothing matters but to see Baba. So, of course, I was stuck because it was about a week before Baba was to arrive. We were on a tour, and arrangements had to be made not only for my trip, but for people to take my place in what I was doing. So I went around and asked people, you know, the person who did the same parts I did, and he said, sure, I'll do your part, don't worry about it. It turned out that there was really no problem as far as my work went, as far as replacing me. It meant missing about 2 performances, and then there was a space of some days where the company went back to Toronto, and then there was a space of about 3 days where they traveled down to Mexico City. And I wasn't missing anything really much, and I said to Miss Kraft, what'll I do if they say, no, you can't go? And she said, well, you just go and think about Baba and see what happens. So I went to the director of the company, and it was a woman, a very fierce lady, and she spent about I don't know, an hour and a half telling me how horrible I was. She just wouldn't listen. It was all, you're this and you're that. And by the time she finished with me, she destroyed my loyalty to the company to the extent where, when she hadn't given me permission yet to go, she said she would let me know. I marched right down to the travel agent and made my reservations to go to Myrtle Beach. And then, of course, it turned out that she gave permission for me to go. And after the fact, I found out that she said that I had threatened her with leaving them in the lurch, which I had never done. I don't know how she got that idea. In any case, I went down to Myrtle Beach, and because I was late, several things happened. Because I had said I wasn't coming, and because I hadn't, one was that I didn't get to stay on the center where everybody else was, and so that fitted right in with my feeling of being at a party that I was not, you know, invited to, and a little left out. And the other thing was, which was very, very important, that the dancers had gotten together and organized a performance for Barbara. And that happened because in 56, the four dancers that were on that trip out in the West Coast, Barbara suddenly one day they said, come and I want you to come to my hotel room and dance with me. And they didn't have any music, they didn't have any clothes, costumes, or shoes, or anything. And they did this impromptu thing, which they of course loved dancing for Baba, but I think they all were very embarrassed and felt it wasn't what they could really do. So they had decided that if Baba came again, they would prepare something. Well, they did. They prepared a whole show. They had music recorded, and they had costumes made, and it was a real program. It wasn't something just thrown together. And of course, they didn't tell me about it because they thought I wasn't coming. And I arrived in Myrtle Beach, and there were all these people getting ready to dance for Barbara. And I said, oh, you didn't tell me about it. And I said, well, you said you weren't coming. And I said, well, that's a fine thing. Well, I'm going to dance anyway. I'm going to be in this program. And I went to Miss Kraske and I announced that I was going to be in this program. And she didn't say anything. She sort of looked coldly at me. And, well, to make a very long story short, there was no way I could get in on this program because I had no music, I had no costumes, I had no ballet shoes, I didn't know what I could do. There wasn't one thing that I did in that ballet company that you could take out as an excerpt and do. So I finally had to admit failure, and I went to Miss Kraske and I said, Miss Kraske, I've decided I'm not going to dance. And she said, that's very good. I'm glad you said that because you ruined the program. You're all prepared and you're not. So I had to accept that, another blow to my ego. And the day came for the performance. What I did is I was a stage manager. I helped them with the performance and I whatever had to be done to the barn to prepare it. And I stood out on the back porch of the barn, and I opened and closed the door for people to come on into the barn to dance with Baba. And Baba sat on the back where the chandelier is, and the whole half, that half back there was the audience, and the front half was the stage, and they did their entering and exiting, and I held it. I believe I was the only person on the center that didn't see the performance, as well as not even being in it. And it was okay, I was perfectly all right, until at the end of the performance, everybody finished. And they'd taken their last bow, and someone came out and said, Baba wants all of you who danced to come out, come back into the barn and be embraced by him for having danced. So I opened the door to let everybody go out into the barn, and they said, no, 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 you have to come too. And I said, no, no, I didn't dance. And they said, Baba said, everybody has to come. And there was a bit of a scuffle on the back porch whether I was to go or not. And then I said to myself, what kind of an avatar is he if he doesn't know that I didn't dance? It's just going to be embarrassing to go up there and be embraced for having danced when I didn't dance. Nevertheless, they pulled me out with them and I had to go out, and of course it was wonderful. Bob embraced me and that was the end. And the thing is that to this day practically people come up to me and say how wonderful it was when I danced for Baba. And that time in 58 was really wonderful in many, many ways. The times that we were with Baba alone in the lagoon cabin, so-called interviews, which were not interviews, it was something just, there were no interviews, it was sitting with Baba and being with him, extremely fulfilling and happy times. And the best of all was that we got to carry Baba in that chair. And that came about, I believe it's because Baba asked for people to carry him, and he chose the dancers because the dancers were supposed to be agile. At least that was the external reason. And there were five of us. And we started out by carrying Baba in one of those Spanish carved chairs that are now in the barn, which really didn't require five people at all. It really required two. So we kind of arranged that we'd have three, that one would stand back and two would hold it at the side. And first time we came out with Baba, we went out front ways and nearly tipped him out of the chair going down the stairs. So then we devised a system of going out backwards so that he was leaning back in the chair. Then Dr. Kenmore had designed a special chair, which was sort of a pale blue vinyl chair and had poles on the side so that four people could carry it. And it was a very oddly designed chair because the front of the poles went down and the back of the poles went up. So it was very hard to keep it level. And we organized a rotational system that the two in the front would rotate to the back and one of the people at the back would leave and another one of the five would come in at different times. We carried Baba whenever Baba arrived at the barn, from the car into the barn and from the barn back to the car. And this worked very nicely until one day Baba was taken on a tour around the center, and we went and carried Baba and stopped at the various cabins. And I don't know, I mean, I kind of wiped out in my mind why that was being done, or whether they said, Baba, this is the cabin on the hill, I don't know. But we did this, and I was in the front, and I was carrying Baba, and we walked and we walked and we put him down, we picked him up, and we see, usually it was not a very long time to be carried Baba, but this day it was long. And Tex was the first that day, it was not his turn, you see. And he walked alongside, and I kept thinking, oh, I should give Tex a chance to carry Baba, but I'm not going to do it. I'm on the front, you know. I'm not going to do it. I got feeling more and more guilty. And as the thought, actually the thought came to me at one specific time. I got, you know, overcome the guilt of not giving Tex a chance to carry that chair, but I didn't want to give it up. And I felt a tap on my shoulder, and I think it was Eric said, Baba says to let Tex carry the chair. And I had to give it up. And it's in the movie. There's a movie of that. It's really interesting to me to see it, because you can see I was really carrying Baba and suffering. I wasn't enjoying it because I was so consumed with this guilt. Well, that also has a thing to it, too, because people say, what was it like to carry Baba? And the only thing I can say was that it was the only time in my life up till then, and probably since, when what I did was, I felt was right, perfect, and the only thing, the concentration was just on doing that, and you didn't, can you understand what I'm saying? It was, I did it well, because it was carrying Baba, and it was extremely fulfilling. It was living in that moment, except for that same demon kept arising. Whenever Tex and Peter were in front of the chair, Baba would tap them on the shoulder and tuck them under the chin and do all these things, and I felt Baba never did this to me. Why didn't he? Because he loved Peter and Tex more than he loved me. And of course, this is tied in with all of the looks around the circle when you were sitting and Baba throwing things and hoping you'd get one, you know. Years later, not many years later, but years later, I saw a film for the first time of us carrying Baba, and I'm in the front of the chair, and Baba taps me on the shoulder, and I help him off, and then there's another film where he chucks me. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that he did do all these things. And because my mind was in such a turmoil of wanting Baba to do what I wanted him to do, and to, you know, approach me the way I wanted him to approach me, that I didn't realize it. So I was quite moved when I saw that film, and something dawned a little bit in my brain about wanting a relationship with Baba and not wanting what he wants. 58, that was, many things happened, but anyway, that passed, and it came to 62, and we got the chance to go to India, the East-West Gathering, and that was another whole different experience, because up till then we had been with Baba in a very small, intimate circumstance, and in India, of course, you've seen the films, we had, of course, the meetings with Baba in group aside, where all the Westerners were present, but it was never so intimate, really, for me in any case, in that way as it had been at the center. And then in the afternoons, Baba on his chair up on that platform with all of these thousands of Indians sitting in the audience and filing past was another tremendous experience. And one thing that was very impressive to me was the very first day I was sitting with Tex. I had just bought a new pair of sandals that were made especially for my feet, and I was wonderfully proud of those little sandals. And we were looking at Baba, and the Indians were firing past, and suddenly it got very dark, and it started to rain. But it was a torrential downpour. And with that rain, the floor of the tent became a sea of mud. And I remember looking down to see if my sandals were going to be all right because of the mud. And then I looked up, there was this panic of people rushing to get to Baba, I suppose thinking they wouldn't get their chance, that Baba would cut off the meeting because of the rain. And the Mandali then all grabbed hands and to protect Baba. And it was the moment when Tex and I looked at each other and were frightened, because it was as though that Baba were going to be torn to pieces, you know, the way rock and roll stars are when they come out of the... And we got very, very upset. And just at that moment, the crowd parted for a second, and there was Baba sitting, but glowing, radiant, like you've never seen. And we texted and looked at each other and said, well, that just goes to show you how much you know about what's happening. The last day in 62, when we were saying goodbye to Baba, and Baba walked through Guru Prasad Hall, past us all, and out the door. And as I saw Baba going out the door, I was overcome with the thought that I would never see him again. And I collapsed on the floor and cried for about, I just don't know how long. And that was the first time that I'd ever had an emotional experience, so I was enjoying it. Really enjoying it. And people evidently were highly annoyed with my behavior. But just to round off this whole thing, I'll tell you some other things, but this whole idea of my not having a reaction to Baba, something happened to me when I was in India in June. Last June was my first trip back to India since 62. And after all those years, I was sitting in Mandali Hall, and Erichin and Mani were sitting on the floor, and there were stories being told. And suddenly, looking at Erichin and Mani, I don't know what did it, but there was this, I was just overcome by this great feeling for them and for everybody and for Baba, and whether you call it love or what you want to call it, I can't describe it. It was very, very strong. And at the same moment that I had that feeling, I knew, really knew inside me, that that was the feeling that I always had when I saw Baba. And so I realized at that moment, really realized, that I did always have that feeling when I saw Baba, but I didn't know it because my ego came so much in the way. Can you understand that? I mean, it was a certainty, and it was like after all these years, Baba gave me that gift to show me that he really did have that feeling. And of course I was being very stupid all these years anyway, because I had opportunities that other people didn't have. For instance, one summer I got a letter from Miss Crass saying that she was away in the country. She used to teach at a place called Jacob's Pillow. It was a dance festival. And Baba, you know, liked to have those Nero Wolfe and Agatha Christie and P.G. Woodhouse stories read to him. And I just got this little casual letter from her saying, here's a job for you, for your master. Could you please find any of these books, because I'm in the country and I can't get out of bookshop. So I had, which shows you in a way, I suppose, that Baba uses you for what you can do. One of my hobbies was haunting the used bookstores in New York. And I knew where you could find things, and I knew how to find things. And so I had a list, and I went out and I found all those books, and I sent them to India. And that started a whole chain. Mani would send me a list of books and I would hunt them up. They were out of print at that time, you see. And I sent Baba those Nero Wolfe books, and I would get a letter back saying Baba was very happy, you made Baba very happy, and he called me Donald Duck. Dear Donald Duck, one letter said that it was so fast that I'm a very good swimmer. And I used to get all these letters and postcards, and I'd read them and go, and put them away in a drawer. Luckily, I saved them all. They didn't really, I can't explain it to you. I don't know if you can understand either. It didn't mean that much to me. I mean, It did, but it was just, you know, okay, nice, and I did that. I wanted to do it. I loved doing it for Baba. But after, years and years later, now I look at those letters and I see there was all that personal thing of my name and my doing something directly for Baba, and Baba asking who sent the books, and then Mamdi St. Donald sent them. And then he'd go like this. So what I'm trying to say is Buzz and I were talking this afternoon, and I don't want to go into a lecture, but it takes a long time. I think it takes differing amounts of time. It takes a long time to really even start, I think, living with Baba. I didn't start out in a kind of honeymoon type of thing. I think I was too young. I started out with enthusiasm for it and with, yes, I read all the discourses and I did all these things, but I didn't relate Baba and the discourses to my life that much. There was too much turmoil in it, in my life. And it was just through the many years of this turmoil that I started more and more to have a relationship with Baba. And although we had a great deal of contact in a way, we had orders for silences, orders for fasts, orders to repeat certain saying 500 times. There were things to do for Baba, but Baba was always to me in India, and I was here. And when I would think about it, yes, I would remember Baba. And I didn't really try very hard, I didn't feel, to really live the life, you know, the good life, whatever you want to call it. Many times I failed Baba, really failed him in orders. For instance, in 1955, we had an order. It was actually quite amusing because Miss Kress appeared at the school at the Met, and she said, "I've had a letter from India." And I said, "Oh, what was in it?" And she said, "Well, there's something that you boys aren't going to like." And I said, "Oh, what's that?" And she said, "Well, I know you're not going to like it." And I said, "Well, for goodness sakes, you know, what is it?" She said, "Well, Baba," and she showed me, and it was in order to be celibate for 3 months. And I went, "Oh, you know, that's easy." And what happened was, although I had never been, you know, a great sex fiend, particularly, the very fact that we were under orders, I suppose, brought up most of it was just unbelievable. And it wasn't me. It was other people attacking me. Believe it or not, I mean, I don't know why, but that's what happened. And I will, true confession, that I was in doing summer stock, and we lived in the dormitory of a college, and the whole cast lived in this one place, and someone attacked me, and I succumbed. And I was overcome with remorse, and I said, "Never will I ever do that again," and it happened a second time. And again, I was overcome with remorse. And I said, "That will never happen again." And then it happened the third time. And by that time, I was just completely wiped out. And it was night, and I got up, and I went downstairs, and there was a room. And this is really true. I mean, that sounds corny, but it's really true. There was a library room. And I couldn't sleep, and I said, "What am I going to do? I'll read a book." And I reached up, and I grabbed a book, and it was Stories from the Bible. And I opened this book just at random. I mean, it really sounds like it's not the way it is, but I opened the book and it was the story of Peter denying Christ 3 times. So that was it was awful. And this Crassus said that if you disobey Baba, it makes things much more difficult for you. But I feel that the very now, I mean, this is my idea, okay? Don't say that Donald Mahler says this is so. But I just feel that the very disobedience, I would rather not have disobeyed Baba, but through the disobedience, I came a little closer to seeing how important it was to obey Baba and how much Baba meant to me. Now, I'm not excusing what I did, but that's really what happened. And I think I found through my whole life with Baba, that's been the case over and over and over again. It was the times when I did something that wasn't right. I'll tell you another story, which is maybe an illustration. The first time, I was on a tour like I am now with the Metropolitan Opera, and I had not been back to Myrtle Beach for many, many years. And it just so happened that tour, that was when I saw you again after all those years, something happened. I had been sick and I'd had an operation in the hospital and I had been at a very low point, and it was after Baba had dropped his body. And at coming out of that sickness and that low point, I started working at Baba House in New York, and through working in Baba House, I started to remember my times with Baba, because people would ask me, what was it like, or what did you do? And I had really never thought about it, never ever talked to a group of people about Baba, and never even talked amongst ourselves that much about our personal experiences or anything.